Hello, and welcome to Good Librations. I'm Carla.
And I'm Lauren.
Good Librations is just the two of us discussing different aspects of stories and how and why we love them.
And a quick monthly reminder to leave us feedback either via the Kiama Library website or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Today's topic is... Novel set in a single day! Like, we could have... That was almost set in a single day.
It took me a day. It was a whole story in itself.
It took me a day to say.
So, you might have noticed it is not going to be the magic and trauma of children's stories today. That's what I said we were going to do last time.
It's true, we lied.
We are not going to do that this time. We are going to do that next time.
Yes.
With a very special guest, author Kel Woods.
Oh, yes. We're very excited about that.
We're very excited. So that's why there's a little bit of a break. She is very busy at the moment doing lots of promo for her new novel. So that's why we have to wait a little bit, but it's going to be great.
We're very excited.
So for Shelf Absorb today, I have been reading Children of Time by Adrian Tchaikovsky.
Ooh.
So I wanted to throw a sci-fi one in here because it's absolutely an underappreciated genre, as far as I'm concerned. Sure. I know that's not true for everyone. So this book was, like, at the same time, a really brilliant scientific thought experiment because the science in it is, like, absolutely mind-blowing. But I think he's very good. Same as Andy Weir, he manages to describe very complex things in a way that you're, like, on board with.
Well, and that it makes sense in that you buy into it. You're like, yep.
Yes.
Cool.
Yeah. But then also this book is sort of a sadly accurate examination of human nature and how effectively we limit and destroy ourselves.
I feel like that's all sci-fi.
It's all sci-fi.
Is that
totally
not just all sci-fi, though?
It totally is.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. It's totally what my sci-fi is about. Oh dear. So it has quite a slow pace, but it's like, it's really insightful and very sharply analytical about humanity. And you just sort of mesmerized the whole way through. Like, it's essentially about humanity's survival thousands of years in the future. And they discover this terraformed world ready to settle the last of humanity on it. But they soon realize that the efforts of previous generations of humanity have sort of irrevocably changed this world. And it might not be as habitable as they think. Da, da, da. It's like, it's great. Like, the science is great. The solution to everything at the end of this book is just fabulous. Like, I wasn't sure where it was going to go, but absolute payoff. Fantastic.
I love that.
It was great.
I have a sci-fi one too. I just finished The Ministry of Time by Kellyanne Bradley, which was a fascinating read.
Yes.
Actually. And a bit of a departure from my typical reads at the moment.
I want to read it. I do.
And like, while certainly sci-fi, as it's essentially a book about time travel,
right,
more or less,
yep.
Which I usually stay away from because no one gets it right.
Yep.
I'm not saying that I would.
Sure.
But they don't either.
Well, it's really hard. Like, time travel, to make really it hard. Work properly is a very difficult concept.
I feel like once the concept of the branching off into, like, new timelines happened, everyone was like, oh, yeah. We'll just do that.
Yeah.
So it's not like you're Back to Future-esque, what you do in the past affects the future. It's like, no, we're just create a new timeline. Which is fine, whatever. But it usually bugs me. But it's also, this book is also a romance and a spy thriller and a workplace comedy, oddly, and kind of a treatise on culture and racism and sexism and queer stories. Like, it legitimately has it all. And I think Bradley did a really good job of fitting it all together to make a story that, given a different treatment, might not have been so neatly done. Like, it could be quite messy, I think.
Right.
She did lose me a little bit in the third act for a few different reasons. Her vision of the future is bleak.
Right.
And I'm just...
I know how you feel about that.
I need a break.
Yeah.
You know, like, the dystopia is here, man. We're in it. It's happening. It's around us. Give me something hopeful to aim for.
Sure.
Give me sci-fi. Like, I've been watching a lot of The Orville. Give me a vision of the future where we have surpassed
the bleakness.
Where we've sort of triumphed over it.
Yes.
I also never love when queer side characters are used as fodder. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like it happens a lot in that we can, we're only allowed to empathize with them through the lens of their pain or their loss or their death or the death of someone they love or that they can't be with the person that they want or whatever. And she does do a bit of that here. But overall, I really enjoyed it and I would absolutely recommend it for anyone who likes that kind of British bureaucratic
sure.
kind of humour. Yeah. But also who wants something a little bit sci-fi. One of the characters, a woman from the 1600s, I reckon must be one of the most well-written characters that has ever been pulled out of time. And she's given such a fantastic character arc, but the way that she just speaks and interacts with the world around her, like she's on Tinder, and it's just very, very clever and very well done. So hard recommend.
Excellent. Okay, so for Shelf Important today, as we explained before, we are going to cover novels set in a single day, which needs no explanation, really.
It's all in the title.
It's all in the title. It is a novel with a story that has a very short time frame. Maybe slightly more than a day for some of them, but like that very short, concise timeline.
I think some of them have prologues or epilogues.
Yeah, that's right.
Whatever.
Like the bulk of the action. That's right. So there's an interesting theory that we found in Italian classicism called the unities. Essentially, the classical unities, which are also called Aristotelian unities or the three unities, are a prescriptive theory on how dramedy,
yeah,
ought to best be shaped. The three unities are, number one, unity of action. A tragedy should have one principal action, focus on one plot with minimal or no subplots. Number two is unity of time. The action in a tragedy should occur over a period of no more than 24 hours. And the third is unity of place. The story should exist in a single location or geographically limited area.
And I believe that most of the stories we looked at really do fit within this scope, even though this prescription was developed in the 16th century by Italian humorist Ludovico Castelvetro.
Beautiful.
Which he based, somewhat tenuously, on the description of plotting in Poetics written in 335 BC by Aristotle.
Mm.
Aristotle, of course, was talking about stories being staged as play because the literacy rate
They were back then.
In ancient Greece was sort of like 8%. And so, you know, only a very specific subset of society had access to the written word.
Right.
And so stories would have been consumed as plays or epic poems or whatever. So in Poetics, Aristotle sets out a treatment for the rules that should govern dramatic theory and that the poet, a word used in those days to mean author or maker, should consider when creating works and rules that have endured in storytelling to the present day.
Yes.
So we're still seeing these rules now. We're still seeing the unities now. And if you particularly look at the stories that are staged, so any of our plays, you'll see that they're sort of remarkably
still fit into those categories. Yeah, that makes sense. So one author who was deeply influenced by Aristotle, certainly with his tragedies, was Shakespeare. Many of his plays can be seen to observe Aristotelian rules, but specifically both The Tempest and Comedy of Errors. We know how Carla feels about farce. Mm. Yes. So the Comedy of Errors was one of the first plays Shakespeare wrote, and in it we can see how influenced he was by the unities. The play faithfully observes Castelvetro's three unities, with both plays being set over a 24-hour period, both in one location, and every incident within the play serves the main plot. So this centres around two sets of twins who are each separated during a shipwreck, and they go to Ephesus to find each other, kicking off a series of hilarious incidents of mistaken identity. In the end, 400-year-old spoilers, they find each other and their parents, and all the problems the mistaken identities cause are resolved.
And I will never get far enough into it to see the resolution, because if you have listened to me talk about Fast before, you will know that the Comedy of Errors is a very specific hell crafted just for me.
You would hate mistaken identity generally.
Any mistaken identity.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's not for me.
Because it does happen, like in, what's his face, Midsummer Night's Dream, same thing.
Yeah, except that I love the story of Midsummer Night's Dream enough that it can carry that, okay, that so, bit. Yeah, yeah.
So the farce can be overcome there.
Still irritating. But yeah. And who am I to thumb my nose at Shakespeare? But there is a modern movie. Well, I say modern. I think it came out in the 80s. Called
modern to us.
Not unlike myself.
Mm-hmm.
Called Big Business, which essentially is this story, but starring Bette Midler and Lily Tomlin, which is very funny, but drives me crazy, which I'm sure is the point.
Yeah, absolutely.
So now we can't really talk about novels set in one day without discussing James Joyce's Ulysses.
It's back!
It raises its head. Now, again, if you've been with us for some time, you'll know how we feel about this.
Mm-hmm.
But for the uninitiated, and for those of us who've never read Ulysses,
yeah,
it's basically only readable if you have the patience of a long-lined frogfish, and only then truly comprehensible if, having waded through it, you are then willing to read 50 or so other texts that have been written about it in an attempt to explain it. But it's a work of modern genius, so, you know, again, who am I? Essentially, and oh boy, am I abbreviating, the story is a modernist work by James Joyce that tells the story of three people experiencing the same day in Dublin, June 16th,
1904,
mm-hmm. To be exact. Based on and having kind of a rough correspondence to Homer's The Odyssey, because, you know, doesn't everything.
It's back!
It's back! It's back! It raises its head. except that Joyce used the Latinized version of Odysseus, Ulysses, as the title.
Mm-hmm.
Look, even he admitted that using The Odyssey as his basis for the novel was somewhat arbitrary. But honestly, at this point, I think if you scratch the paint off any story ever told, you'll expose Homer's grinning face. So, you know, it was inevitable, really. But also, Joyce referenced Shakespeare, particularly Hamlet, the Bible, Irish politics, British rule in Ireland, sexuality, Irish slang and culture, and Irish poet William Blake thematically within the story too. It kind of has everything. That's kind of the point,
yeah,
of it.
Sure. Yeah, yeah,
sort of has everything. The reason the story is so difficult to read is that Joyce utilised a particularly experimental style at the time, employing stream of consciousness narration.
Oh, I hate it so much.
Multiple perspectives. You feel about this stream the way that I feel about Fast.
Yes.
Yes. He also used non-linear, just to make things even more interesting, he used non-linear storytelling, linguistic wordplay, and shifting styles, even within sections and chapters. Oh, and it's 900 pages long. So, you know, set in one day, but if that day was on Venus. Which is part of its pain and part of its genius.
Yeah.
Before Joyce, no book really exists like that. Like, there was a little bit of stream of consciousness stuff going on, but no book really kind of did this.
Yeah.
But also, in no book exists really in which the introspection and function of thought was given such a treatment.
Yeah, sure.
Speaking on Ulysses does kind of require a preamble on style and frustration. But essentially, the story is about three people. Leopold Bloom, who might be seen as the Odysseus figure, Molly Bloom, who might be seen as Penelope, and Stephen Dedalus, who might be Telemachus. And the way that their lives intersect with each other and other players and even the city itself. There's a lot of theory, of course, of what the main theme or idea of the story is. Some say it's the search for paternity. Some posit it's about literally everything, all of the things, and should not be pigeonholed into one theme. But the one that kind of makes the most sense to me is that Joyce was attempting to take any random Dubliner, or three in this case, on any random day and elevate his story to that of a Greek myth,
mm-hmm.
which I kind of love that.
Sure.
It was also the day in which Joyce, that date particularly, I found out later, it was also the date that he met his wife.
Oh, so that's, well, that's
I think that's why that day. Sure. Yeah. But I particularly loved one person on Reddit's summation of it, which he just said, it's just a very full day. Birth, death, sex, booze. You know, big day.
Oh, dear. Virginia Woolf, in a letter to art critic and philosopher Roger Fry in 1922, said of her relationship with Ulysses, "Ulysses, to which I bind myself like a martyr to a stake, and have thanked God, now finished, my martyrdom is over. I hope to sell it for £4.10. although I think to call Woolf's sentiment of the book disparaging is reductive, even she admitted its beauty and cleverness, albeit her moments of praise for it were wildflowers within the weeds of her general disapproval. And as scathing as she was about Ulysses, as is also Carla.
Would we call it scathing?
Maybe not scathing, but just frustrating.
Look, I recognise the frustration.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, but I'm with you. Like, as far as, like, we've talked about this in other podcasts, it's considered genius, but it's also considered unreadable.
Yeah.
So...
yeah.
You know?
It's like Whitman. It's large and it contains multitudes.
Multitudes that I don't want to read.
Multitudes in multitudes.
In shaping Mrs. Dalloway, Woolf was either intentionally or unintentionally obviously influenced by Ulysses, and either through admiration or white hot spite, Mrs. Dalloway does smack verily of Joyce's tome. On its surface, Mrs. Dalloway is a novel about three people. Oh, what do you know? Separately making their way around London across a single day in June, and which attempts to explore the direct quote inner feelings of her protagonists and using stream of consciousness prose. Well,
you know,
there are of course shades of Proust and Henry James and other authors Woolf was into, and of course she had her very own distinctive indomitable style. It is remarkably similar.
Yeah. You know? It's very similar.
Yeah. Like the descriptions were the same, except in a different city.
Sure. I wonder if the day in June was the 16th.
Yeah. That's right. So she basically said, surely not, Jimmy. No, man, there's another way. And then wrote one of the most landmark books of modernist stream of consciousness fiction to prove it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's eminently more readable. Let's put it that way.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. I'd be far more likely to read that than Ulysses.
True. The next domino in line might be The Hours by Michael Cunningham, written in 1998 in a stream of consciousness style that mimics Woolf's and is a tale set across a single day, more or less, and intertwines the stories of three women.
Three? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
This is such a shock.
One of whom is Virginia Woolf, who he imagines across a single day in June.
June.
In 1923, as she writes Mrs. Dalloway.
Okay.
The other two protagonists, Laura Brown, exists in 1949 and Clarissa Vaughan in 1999. Both have passing relationships to either Woolf or Mrs. Dalloway, but seem to be connected by their, not just the intertextuality of the text itself, but their ability to reflect on the minutiae of their lives and the introspection around their roles and the choices afforded to them.
Right.
So Cunningham, like Woolf and Joyce before him, made epics of small moments and illustrated how profound one day can be in examining a life. Mm. And I feel like that's the point. Like, as we said about Joyce, I feel like all of these.
Yeah.
Across one day stories are very much just like there's this little small section of time of a life, but it has a story in it. And I think that's sort of noble and lovely.
I like that.
The Hours actually won a Pulitzer and the Penn Faulkner Award as well the following year. So, and was made into a movie.
That's right.
With Nicole Kidman's terrible prosthetic
nose. So I think one of the main points of focus in these types of stories is the quiet epiphany, a neat little character arc that takes a person from one point to a vast other in a very truncated period. And then there are some stories that are set in a relatively short period of time, but which feel so large, it's hard to believe it. So, like Jurassic Park.
Mm.
like, those people had a day.
Yeah, man. What a day.
What a day.
Like, it's, you know, it's sci-fi and it's unbelievable.
Yes.
Although the direwolves are back. So... maybe, I mean, not so unbelievable.
There might be some mosquitoes in Amber just waiting.
This is all I'm saying.
But yeah, there's a real skill in that, isn't there? Yeah. To make an entire 100,000 word novel. I don't think Jurassic Park is 100,000 words.
No.
But a novel, large novel set across one day, feel layered and pacey and have the characters have deep and profound arcs.
Yeah. Speaking of deep and profound arcs... Dan Brown's The Da Vinci Code, which we laugh because we quite agree, both of us, that that thing needs to be violently edited. Yeah. But anyway, The Da Vinci Code is another instance in which so much stuff happens, it's almost unbelievable that it occurs across one day.
Yeah, I mean, I've read it and I don't remember thinking of it being a single day.
No, but it certainly was.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense now.
It kind of shows up in the morning like, hey, how guys, how's it going?
Yeah. And then it's like a big chase across.
Like massive, yeah.
That's it.
With all the clues and the whatever. Clues. So I think this trope lends itself well to action or thriller.
Yeah.
Because the ticking clock is very much a character in and of itself. Absolutely. Really.
Yeah.
I recently watched Knives Out and the second one, something about an onion.
Oh, the glass onion.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought that kind of Clue-esque confining of people in one space.
Yes.
And then also confining the pacing to one day really sets the pressure in a very, very clever way.
That's right.
Some other actions and thrillers that do this well are No Exit by Taylor Adams or Contest, which is one of your favourites, Matthew Riley.
I love Contest. It's fabulous.
The Hunted by Gabrielle Bergmosa and The Guest List by Lucy Foley. And then there's this trope within the kind of thrillery genre that I would say, I don't know if it even has a name, but it's kind of poignant in a really unnerving way. The idea that one day or one interaction or a single hour or a brief minute might turn someone's relatively comfortable life into an utter shambles.
Yeah, sure.
Like a tipping point. Yeah, like a tipping point, like an escalation beyond madness or an escalation beyond...
Yeah, sure.
Something that can be controlled.
Yeah.
And here I'm thinking of books like Ian McEwan's Saturday or the movie Falling Down, if I don't know if you've ever seen that.
Yeah.
Or The Dinner by Herman Koch or Like Mother by Cassandra Austin. Just the idea that our lives might be upended in really awful ways is very, very clever, but it kind of leaves me very cold. You know, I think most of us don't really want to think about that.
No, that's the thing about those ones, isn't it? It's like that.
Yeah.
This could happen.
Yeah.
But I don't want it to.
And it could be any of us and it could just be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Doesn't take much.
Creeps me out, man.
Moving on from that
to the other end of the spectrum.
Yes, we wanted to examine romances set in a single day for one main reason. Is it plausible? Right? Is it believable that two people can come together, spend 24 hours, and know that they are deeply in love?
Nah.
I agree with you. I do. But, like, I think that maybe, like, that's the ideal.
Sure.
Right. Like, I mean, a lot of times romance books or romance movies, it's all about that, isn't it? It's like that bubble, that ideal situation, and we buy into it because we want that.
Yeah.
But realistically, so that we can get all that back and forth and that miscommunication, that indecision, just all out of the way.
Yeah.
Crunch that whole process into a time-saving delight where all the questions are answered and the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted, you know, like moving through it.
Sure.
And I think too, for all of these novels, I think it really depends on whether they're together for that whole 24 hours or not, as to the plausibility.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Like if... every minute was used and every moment was conversation and relating to each other and learning about each other, because then maybe...
Still no. Just you've got two people on their best behaviour.
It's true.
Even when they're not. No, but even when it's enemies to lovers.
No, but I mean, you can love someone without knowing the whole of them though, right? Because I think...
Oh, that's a big question. Can you?
Yes.
Can you truly say that you love someone without knowing...
the whole of them.
The whole of them, yeah.
I think so. Because, I mean, there are many people maybe that they fall in love with someone and then learn things later that make them fall back out. right?
Yep.
I don't know. You know.
Sure.
And then maybe, too, it depends on the type of person. Like, someone who is quite buttoned up and reserved in their judgments and decision-making, like, maybe wouldn't fall in love that quickly, but someone who wears their heart on their sleeve maybe would.
Hmm. I mean, I think insta-love of any kind is tosh. But that doesn't stop me from loving stories about it.
That's what I mean.
I will still read the stories and I'll watch the movies.
Yes. I think we, you know, buy into it because we want it to be true.
Sure.
But we don't all get meet-cutes and we don't all fall in love at first sight, or we don't all find a hirsute, gravel-voiced warrior type who says, who did this to you? You know?
More's the pity.
More's the pity. Well, that's what I mean. We don't get that, but we, like, we want that. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. So some titles that do this well, like The Romance in a Single Day. So the one that kept coming up when I was looking into it was The Sun is Also a Star by Nicola Yoon. I haven't read it, but it's very well considered as both a youth romance and a novel set in a single day. The Paper Palace by Miranda Cowley Heller. That's one of the Reese's Book Club picks. Meet Me at the Lake by Carly Fortune. The Love Season by Ellen Hildebrand. One Day with You by Shari Lowe. Today, Tonight, Tomorrow by Rachel Lynn Solomon. Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist by Rachel Cohn.
Which I do love that one, actually.
Sure. Yeah. It's clever.
Yeah.
And then I was thinking maybe the ones that do it well include setting as a character.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Like if you think of, I mean, even as you said before, those ones by James Joyce and then by Virginia Woolf, it was about them moving through the city.
Mm.
It was about Dublin. It was about London.
Mm.
And then if you think of the before movies, they have that, you know, time constraint factor, but they also have this beautiful city
mm.
that they're moving through as they're falling in love.
Yeah, like the city. We've often talked about how the setting is a character.
The setting is a character. Yeah, yes. For sure. So they're experiencing sort of that falling in love process in a heightened way because they're in that beautiful place that facilitates that falling in love.
Sure.
You know?
I definitely think it's a tool used for to make us buy it.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you don't believe in love at first sight?
No.
No, me neither.
And we've talked about this before. No. Sure don't.
Absolutely not.
I'm a cold, hard husk of a person. I barely believe in love.
Oh dear. And I was thinking too about this. How do you feel about the trend of romance novels being called the trope that they're using in the novel?
Oh, I hate it with The Fire of a Thousand Suns.
Me too.
Yes.
I don't like it. So examples of this: Funny Story by Emily Henry, Beach Read by Emily Henry. She's done it a few times. Enemies to Lovers by Laura Jane Williams. Only One Bed by Katie Wilde.
Mm.
Like, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And then there's like movies that do it too. There's one called Love at First Sight. There's one called Meet Cute. There's one called Second Act.
Yep.
Like they're named after the trope yes. they're using. And I don't know how I feel about it. I don't. Like, by all means, say what you're doing. Like, it's a lovely signifier. We know exactly what we're getting. But it's too on the nose or something. I don't, yeah.
No, I hate it because if you're banking on or capitalizing on one trope.
Right.
Then what else is there?
Yeah.
Like, we shouldn't necessarily be pitching or hinging a whole book on a single trope. I just don't think that's how tropes become cliches.
Yes, yes, right, yes. Yeah. And you were saying yesterday, I forget the analogy you used when we first started talking about this, that you wanted to, like, come across it in the wild. What was there? Was like a wolf thing?
Oh, yeah. I wanted to come across it like a wolf in the Black Forest, in the yes. mist, emerging from the mist.
Yeah.
You know, like I think that there's a charm in the surprise to it.
Yes.
And in seeing how the author might have used it differently or even subverted it.
Yes.
Like, I can't, but for me, I can't even stand watching movie trailers.
Right.
Like, I like to know as little as possible yes. about any story before committing to it.
Yeah.
I just adore being told a story.
Right.
And I adore buying in and going on the journey, so completely absorbed by it and anticipating something that I've been told is going to take place immediately takes me out of the story. I'm waiting for it. I'm looking for it.
Yeah, you don't want to be told the story in the title.
No, I don't want to be told anything, but yes, exactly, yes. For certainly. Yep. But I think we owe it to authors to let them kind of take our hands and, like, discover the map they've spent so much time making, you know.
Same as people who read the last pages first.
Well,
it makes me furious.
I just think, you know, therapy. If you can't... Actually, we know somebody who does that. If you can't...
We know a few people who do
that. We know quite a few people who do it. And I need you to come and talk to me about this, because I need to understand more why this happens.
Yes. We wanted to chat quickly about character arc also. Like, how can you properly convey change in character over such a short amount of time? Just like with falling in love, how can 24 hours be long enough for the kind of fundamental growth that we need to see in a character?
Yeah, again, I don't think it can, but I will buy into it every time if it's done well.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I found a great blog about character development in fast-paced stories, and Gabrielle Pollack says, if a character's experiences don't change him at all, what's the point?
Sure.
Fast-paced plots don't have to be shallow. When you create a hero intentionally, his choices will drive the plot, his arc, and the theme, so that readers can't resist hanging on for the ride. So she suggests that four things need to happen in a fast-paced story, which I think work for this novel in a single day situation as well. So they are, number one, giving the protagonist thematic convictions. The protagonist's every move should fuel or mitigate the conflict. So she says that with a positive character arc, the protagonist will hold two opposing beliefs during the story, a lie at the beginning, and the truth they transition to at the end. Which is a very nice little...
It's a nice, very neatly described, isn't
neatly,
it?
Neatly described, for sure. Number two, make the protagonist live out his convictions. Every thought, word, and action must be motivated by his convictions and worldview.
Which means acting out the lie in the beginning and acting out the truth in the end.
Yep.
Which is easier said than done, for sure. Yeah.
Number three, punish the protagonist for his mistakes. This is so he can recognize the source of his misfortune and alter his path. And then number four is weld foil characters' choices to the theme. So side characters need to live out their values and reap the consequences as well, so the protagonist can grow through observing them.
Yeah, that's very clever.
That's true. We can't learn everything there is to learn just ourselves. Mm. There's so much that we learn from other people and from seeing what they go through. So I was thinking, like, maybe as long as these novels set in a single day capture those fundamental things...
Mm.
Then we're on board.
I'm literally only thinking of, for some reason, the only set in one day story that's coming into my head to try and make sense of this is Die Hard.
Right. Yeah.
So.
100%.
Yeah. And it fits. Yeah.
Absolutely fits. For sure. So the closer the protagonist arc is to the theme of the story, the more we buy in. And then those single day novels that don't do that are the ones that we struggle to relate to. You know?
Yeah, that makes sense.
I like it.
So for I Just Can't Help Myself, I thought we'd talk about movies set across one day and maybe perhaps some of our favourites.
Yeah, sure.
Because I feel like there was a period there where this was a really big thing in movies, and particularly young adult movies.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, I think of movies like The Breakfast Club and Can't Hardly Wait, and more recently Booksmart.
Yeah, for sure.
Which was quite good. And, you know, the classics, Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Ferris Bueller. Fabulous.
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 And Clerks and Dazed and Confused is one I thought about the other day.
Mm.
And quite as well as being a fantastic tool for pacing, the ticking clock, it's a particular trope that situates quite, as we said, can situate quite profound character arcs within a short period. So, except when it's very trickily done, that it's one day technically.
Yes.
But it's many, many days actually, which is one of my favorite tropes is the Groundhog Day of it all.
Agreed. I'm with you, because I think it's very clever, because you're still condensing it to that single day frame, but you're doing it like you're expanding your potential within that.
Yes.
Aren't you?
For sure. Yes. I love the repeating day thing, man.
Yeah, like, me too.
I have yet to see one that I don't like. And I even endured The Edge of Tomorrow.
I love The Edge of Tomorrow.
Wherein Emily Blunt plays an amazing character and Tom Cruise plays a great character called Tom Cruise.
Aren't all of his movies like that?
Exactly. But it was a good one. And my other favourites, of course, Groundhog Day, Palm Springs is a great, more recent one, yes, which I really liked.
It's really clever.
And one that I just rewatched for the second time the other day was The Map of Tiny Perfect Things.
I love The Map of Tiny Perfect Things. It's so, so good. Beautiful.
So beautiful.
I love it.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
And I think it also really speaks to that Joycean, like, let's make epics of little moments.
Yes. Right? Oh, that movie.
Like, very, 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 very,
yes,
poignantly and very pointedly.
Yes.
Says, here's all the little moments.
Yeah. And it's so gently done.
It's very gently
isn't
done.
Isn't it? Like, yeah, even from the start, he's already in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, he's already, yeah, in that, and he's already repeating, and the way that he's chosen to exist in that space is so gorgeous.
So sweet, yeah.
It's beautiful. I love it.
It's also based on a novel by The Magician's author, Lev Grossman.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I would say all three of those movies are kind of comfort movies for me. I can, not unlike the trope suggests, watch them and watch them and watch them again. Yeah.
And The Edge of Tomorrow is actually based on a book called All You Need Is Kill, yeah, by Hiroshi Sakurazaka. Some other books with this trope are This Time Tomorrow by Emma Straub, Replay by Ken Grimwood, The First 15 Lives of Harry August by Claire North, Before I Fall by Lauren Oliver, The 7.5 Deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle by Stuart Turton, and A Week of Mondays by Jessica Brody.
Thanks for joining us today. Don't forget to follow Kiama Library on social media and check out the podcast page of our website for show notes. And if you have the time, rate and review wherever you can.
So as we said, our next topic is going to actually be the magic and trauma of children's stories with Cal Woods.
Whoop, 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 whoop.
Thanks for sticking with us. See you next time.
Bye.